invite you to join in with us as we study. We are, turn over to, Numbers chapter, end of chapter 10, beginning in 11. So we're in a, when you get ready to go on a trip, it's pretty exciting, isn't it? You get to go on, you know, any kind of trip. You get excited, you get everything's prepared, everything's ready. What have the Israelites been doing here at Mount Sinai? They've been getting ready, they've been preparing. We've got everything set in order. Even to the point of we know who is going to head out first, in what order they're going to, you know, form this column of people as they start making their trek toward Canaan. What has God promised them since Genesis chapter 12? A land, right? Exactly. So he's promised them that he'd make a great nation. We have a great nation. He promised them the land. It's time to go get the land. It's time for them to receive the promise that God made. Well, a lot of things have been put in place. All this time, how long did they spend here at Mount Sinai? Give or take? About a year, right? So all this time, they've been learning about God. What might they have learned? Okay, God's power. He's demonstrated that many times coming out of Egypt. What else? Maybe how particular God is about his laws. When he says he wants something done this way, he's very specific in a lot of these things, right? Do it this way. I want it this way. So his laws, all the things, so they prepared the tabernacle. They've built it according to his instructions. They've consecrated the priests. What have they celebrated? Passover, right? Okay. And commemorating what happened when they came out of Egypt. So and now they're ready to leave and start their journey. So when they pull out, what's first? Ark of the Covenant, isn't it? All right. So when they tear out, when they pull out and they're ready to start off, Ark of the Covenant's going first. Who's the first group that heads out? Judah, the camp of Judah. Who makes up the camp of Judah, remember? Hard to remember some of this, isn't it? Judah, Ephraim, Zebulun? No, Ephraim. He's got his own camp. It was Reuben and... No, it wasn't. It was Reuben had his own camp. Issachar and Zebulun. Right, okay. I was just checking. All right, so Judah's camp goes out first. After Judah's camp and Issachar and Zebulun, then who's next? The tabernacle goes. Who's carrying the tabernacle? A few of the clans. All right, we're close. Yeah, that's right. Gershon and Merari. Remember, there was the Kohathites, the Gershonites, and the Merari. All right. So those three were responsible for the structure and the anything in it. So Gershon and Merari move out carrying the tabernacle. That's the structure part of it. Okay. And then the camp of Reuben goes next. Alright, so Reuben, camp of Reuben, and then that's got Simeon and Gad. So they tear out next. And then the Kohathites follow them. And what are the Kohathites carrying? They're carrying the furniture, alright? Okay. So, and then it's followed by the camps of Ephraim and Dan. So, when they arrive at you know, a destination and they're going to set up the tabernacle, what gets there first? Besides Judah, the camp of Judah, the tabernacle structure gets there first. They can put that thing up, start setting up. Then what comes in next? The furniture and everything in it. So they're ready to leave. Now, before they leave, Moses talks to his brother-in-law, Hobab. Hobab is from that general area, okay, that they're going to be traveling. And Moses wants him to come with them for the purpose of he can be their eyes. He knows the countryside. He knows the territory. He can tell them and give them information. And so he encourages him to come along with him, but Hobab doesn't want to go. He says, I will not go, but rather to my own land and relatives. He's going back home. But Moses encourages him and further requests. And we don't really have the answer recorded for us, other than the fact that we read about Hobab's family later on being among the Israelites. So, whether we can assume that at this time that he did join them, or not, but that conversation, occurs as they're heading out. Now, as they're heading out, when the Ark of the Covenant moves out first, then Moses says in verse 35 of chapter 10, he says, "Rise up, O Lord, and let your enemies be scattered, and let those who hate you flee before you." And then when the ark stops, when it comes to a stop, then he says, "Return, O Lord, to the myriad thousands of Israel." So God is going to be leading them, guiding them, taking them where he wants them to go. And the people have learned. Have they learned to trust in God? What did they learn? What happened while they were at Mount Sinai? What was that big event? Were they sinned? They worshiped another false God, right? And they saw God's reaction to that, how much he disapproved and did not like that. So they learned who God is and what he wants from them. So here they are. I can imagine, ready to go, full of excitement. Here we go on this. So in chapter 11, we go out, and it says in verse chapter 11, the people became like those who complain of adversity in the hearing of the Lord. And when the Lord heard of it, his anger was kindled, and fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. And the people therefore cried out to Moses. Moses prayed to the Lord, and the fire died out. And they named the place Taberah. So, almost as quickly as we leave out, seems like, here we are, and the people are complaining. It doesn't even say what they're complaining about here. But God hears it. And he is angry with them. Have you ever worked on a project or something that you worked on? This just happened to us. It was pretty funny at work. Worked on a project. We had this thing going for maybe 6 months. And then meet with, you know, somebody and they think, you know, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do it that way. All that time was wasted. Just completely, all that work, all the hours that went into it, just wasted. And you might think all this time they spent at Mount Sinai, only with my reasoning can I think, I wonder if God felt that way. I mean, he's showing them all this stuff, and as soon as we leave out, here they are complaining. And God lets them have it. Fire starts consuming them, you know, into the camp, and it consumes the four corners. And as we keep going here, we're going to see some more of that, that attitude from the Israelites. So let's keep going. And there were some among them, the sons of Israel, and kind of, it seems like a part of the group maybe stirred up the rest of the group, maybe something like that. And, it causes all of Israel to cry out again, about food. Who's going to give us meat? Now, did they have anything to eat? Yeah. The manna had started way back a long time ago. When did the manna come? Every morning, right? Except on the Sabbath. Every day it was out there. They could gather it, cook it, boil it, eat it, make cakes out of it, whatever they needed, they could do. But here they are, they're wanting something else. What are we going to, you know, who's going to give us meat? What do they remember? Ah, the fish. They like fish. The cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions. Everything that we had back then, we don't have now. And verse 6, what is it? There's nothing to look at except what? We don't have anything but this, the. You know, it's kind of what they said. Except this manna. They weren't happy with it. They weren't satisfied with it. How long had they been eating it? It's been a pretty long while since they come out of Egypt, hadn't it? Been eating it for a long time. So the manna, what was it like? It explains it here we haven't really seen what it's like, but in the scriptures, what does it look like? Like coriander seed? I don't know what that looks like, so that doesn't help me. Bdellium? Some of you may have researched that and know, but, what they could do with it is mix it with oil, kind of a sweetness to it, all right? They could make cakes out of it, boil it, different things like that. And when the dew fell on the camp, the manna would fall with it. And it was there for them. God was taking care of them. God was providing for them. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So Doug's putting out the description in Exodus chapter 16 of the manna. There is also that it's white. They can make it wafers with had a honey. Okay, so your point is they could, when they were cooking back then, they could have it in their house and they could have it, and they were instructed not to let it stay over, except on Friday they could gather it, for the next day, Saturday, the Sabbath. So, it was every day they had to do it and go out and work for it. Okay? So they complained. And they bring this and they talk about this. And Moses you know, a lot of times, you know, it'll say in, that this is Moses' complaint, okay? And this is, you know, Israelites' complaint, and now Moses' complaint to God. But we'll talk about that a little bit here. What Moses says here is different than the way the Israelites are complaining. God treats them very differently. Because notice what Moses says. He says, Moses heard the people, each man at his doorway, and God's anger was kindled greatly, and Moses was displeased. In verse 11, Moses says to the Lord, "Why have you been so hard on your servant? And why have I not found favor in your sight that you have laid the burden of all this people on me?" Moses' complaint wasn't at all about the manna or anything. What was he talking to God about? All right. About himself. How, it seems to me he's asking, how can I handle this? How, what am I supposed to do? How can I do this? And he essentially says, I can't do this. I cannot accomplish this. I can't succeed in this task the way it's handed to me. And he, what does he say at the end of it? He says he'd rather, if I can't succeed, I can't accomplish this. He said, kill me. Kill me. And you think about Moses as a leader of these people. You think about him leading and being in a leadership position. You know, when you see good, solid leaders, they want to be able to accomplish the task that they're given. If they're given a task that is impossible to accomplish, you know, they'll turn that down. But give them something, a task, to lead people to do something, a group or whatever, and you'll see them do whatever it takes to accomplish that. When Moses was here, he didn't see how he could do this. And he asked God a little bit later, he says, are we going to kill all of these animals that we've got here? You know, they'll be gone, you know, very quickly. They won't feed all these people. What am I supposed to do? And so this is what he presents to God. And even that, but how to deal with all of these people. Moses felt this burden on his shoulders very much. There was a solution. This happened already once, and I'm not sure if it was a temporary solution or what. But Jethro, remember, had suggested what? You know, to set up some men to help judge, help take care of some of these matters among the people. Well, here it is again, and this time God gives Moses help. Okay? And so he treats Moses much differently than he does with his complaint, if we call it a complaint, than he does with the Israelites and what they were griping about. So, in verse 16, God says to the, to Moses, gather 70 men, elders, bring them together. We're going to put them and they're going to help you share this load and share this burden, and they're going to help. And they're going to stand with him. And then he answers the people's complaint and their griping. He's angry with them. I don't see him being angry with Moses and what he was bringing to God, but he's angry with the people and their dissatisfaction. They're not trusting in God. So he says, he's going to give them meat and they're going to eat it. And he's going to give them a lot. He says, verse 19, you shall eat it not one day, nor two, nor 5 days, nor 10 days, nor 20 days. but for a whole month, you're going to eat it until it comes out your noses. It's like, you want the meat? Here it is. And he just crams it. And it's just going to be coming out their ears. And he says, why is he doing this? Why is he angry? Why is he doing this? Why is he just, going to do this to them? It's not necessarily for them to help them, is it? And he's not necessarily giving them what they're asking for in a way. He's making a point out of this. Yeah, exactly. But he says why in verse 20. He says, because you have rejected the Lord who is among you and have cried out before him saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? So, what was their griping about? It wasn't necessarily just about the food, was it? They were saying, we want to go back to Egypt. Back there where it was all comfy and cozy. We want to go back there. Yeah, Doug's making the point that back in Exodus 2, they were as slaves in Egypt that they were complaining about being there. They wanted, about the slavery and the tough life they had. So, what's a sign of immaturity? The way they're acting, isn't it? It really is. Here's some things, that I thought about. That very last statement is what I'm thinking about. If you think about what kind of a person is it that complains all the time? It's tough. That's a tough thing to live with. But what's the opposite? If you think of the opposite of someone who goes around complaining and griping, what's the opposite? Well, it's somebody who's what? Thankful, content. Yeah, thankful, strong, resourceful, a good steward. All of those things don't go along with someone who complains, does it? But the thing about it is, we don't recognize it. I don't recognize it. I think about this, and I've tried to do this, and catch myself when something's coming out of me that's complaining or that's negative or like that. It is hard to recognize that in ourselves. It's very hard. Something happened recently. It's pretty funny. Probably, if I were to think about people that I've known in my life, the person that's probably the grumbles the most, just doesn't have anything necessarily pleasant, to say. And, it's always looking at the bad side of things, negative, complaining kind of thing. And, turns out, something occurs and he makes the statement. He says, I can get along with anybody. I can get along with anybody. And, the person relaying it to me, is like, dude, you're like the worst one to, be complaining and grumbling about anything. We don't recognize it in ourselves. It's hard to. It's something that I want to think about. And after studying this, I want to think more about it. And, try to be the opposite of that kind of person. Someone who is, thankful and content and all of that. So, in Moses, when Moses brought this to the Lord, the third bullet up there, when he brought that to the Lord, it's more of a sense that he was bringing a problem and looking for a solution, right? And looking for a solution for this problem. How can I do this? How can I accomplish this? But with the Israelites, when they were complaining and griping, what were they? Was there anything like that? It wasn't anything about looking for a solution. It was complaining. It was wishing that they were back where they were, that they had not come this far, that the whole past year and a half, or however long it's been, was just gone and they were back where they were. All right? So, yeah, very immature, exactly. All right, but even with Moses here, look in all right, verse 21 and 22, where he's talking, where Moses is saying, should flocks and herds be slaughtered? You know, how am I going to do this? How does the Lord plan to accomplish this? And, there was a little, it's hard to, from this to see what was the intonation or anything with Moses, but, at the end of verse 22, Moses, or should all the fish in the sea be gathered together? This isn't sufficient, is really what his point is. And God says, is the Lord's power limited? Now you shall see whether my word will come true or not. Moses was in this huge position of leading all these people, but yet, as the leader, he was still growing. He was still learning about God. That's right. Yeah. So Rick's saying, they're like babies wanting to be carried through this. And, Moses saying, if it's going to be this way, just kill me. This is just not, So, So here they are, and so, he's talking to Moses. Moses has to learn who God is, that God, he can accomplish this, and they don't have to get rid of all their, their stock, to feed these. How many people are there? 3,550 men, plus everybody else. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, how can I do this? That's right. So Moses goes out and tells the people what God is saying. He gathers the 70 men and they're there. God comes down and speaks, and essentially he's putting on these 70 elders, he's putting them forth as the people he's chosen, and the Spirit comes on them, and they prophesy. But there were two men who also prophesied, besides the men that God was specifically setting out here of the 70. But there was two others, Eldad and Medad. And so the Spirit rests on them, and it says that it was among... these two were among those who had been registered. but had not gone out to the tent. So it's almost like they had been maybe suggested, their names put forth as one of the, you know, of all of these, but only 70 were the ones chosen and gone out. But these were other two that had also been, you know, looked at or, you know, or considered. And so these two prophesy, and who sees them prophesy? Yeah, Joshua. Joshua sees them and hears them, and he goes and he tells Moses that, you know, they're prophesying. You've got to stop them, in verse 28. And Moses' response is pretty interesting. As a leader of all these, you know, and everything that Moses has on him, is there any ego in Moses at all? What does he say? And then, hey, these guys are doing, they're not supposed to be doing this. All right. Well, he says, are you talking to Joshua? Are you jealous for me? You know, all right. Moses says, I would that everyone, that all the Lord's people were prophets, that God would put his spirit on all of us. That would make Moses' job a lot easier, wouldn't it? That would, might give them a little bit of more wisdom and thought, you know, before they, you know, they speak. But Moses was completely willing for everyone to have that ability and to be able to help and to contribute, you know, the same way as the 70. But, so that shows you about Moses' attitude, you know, in this, as he comes to God with these problems and things, how to deal with the situation. So God does what he says he is, was going to do in verse 31 through the rest of the chapter. A wind comes forth, comes through the camp, fills the camp. 2 cubits worth. If a cubit's 18 inches, we got 3 feet of birds, quail, filled up. How far? A day's journey. No, a day's journey. How far is a day's journey? I think there's probably a rule on that in the Jewish law. I don't know what that is, but a day's journey could be 10, 12, 15 miles. It's possible. I don't know if it was that or less, but 3 feet? That's a long way. That's a lot. And so the people spent all day, all night, all the next day gathered the quail. The one that gathered the least gathered 10 homers. Figuring a homer at a 55-gallon barrel drum, was the estimate I saw. 10 of them. That was the least. That's a lot. Spread them out, dry them out around the camp. While the meat was still in between their teeth, before it was chewed, the anger of the Lord was kindled against the people, and he struck them with a very severe plague. So he gave them all of this, and what seemed to happen? All right. And we get a little bit more information when we see the name of the place. In verse 34, so the name of the place was called Kibroth Hattaavah because they buried the people who had been greedy. It was as though Kibroth Hattaavah, the meaning I saw for it, was graves of lust, that they were so greedy and so thankless and going about in getting all of this, that God was the furthest thing from their mind while they were attacking, you know, what God had given them. And God was so angry with them. Because of their attitude and the way they were behaving, that he sent a plague in among them. Not very far, is it? Mount Olive to Jerusalem would be a Sabbath day journey. I don't think that was very far. Oh! <It just flipped. laughs> Oh, yeah. Okay, forget what I said. It's a Sabbath day's journey, which is very short. Yeah. Yeah, because I was thinking, well, that's just... Yeah. Okay. All right. All right. Okay. That might be. All right. Well, let's keep going. So we've seen these, you know, the people's attitudes here. Let's start in verse 12. It comes a bit closer to home to Moses in another event here. So it happens, and we don't know the time span here, you know, as far as how quickly these things fell together. But in chapter 12, Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of a Cushite woman that Moses had married. But their real point about this is verse 2, what do they say to Moses? Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us as well? And who heard him? God heard him. What, you know, here's Aaron. Who is Aaron now? Moses' brother. He's been consecrated. He's the high priest. He's gone through all that. And here he is with Miriam. And Miriam's the one who's punished out of this. So maybe she was the instigator, but it doesn't say. But here they are, jealous, or whatever, you know, attitudes and things come into play here against Moses. What about us? You know? And so God hears this, and he says, you three come to the tent of meeting. And they come to the door, and God stands right there with them at the tent of meeting. He's with them, and his presence is there. And they stood there, and this is what God says in verse 6. Hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, it sounds like a father scolding his child. It really, hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, shall make myself known to him in a vision. I shall speak with him in a dream. That's not the way I speak to Moses. That's the way he would speak to his prophet. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my household. With him I speak mouth to mouth. Even openly, not in dark things, he beholds the form of the Lord. God holds Moses in a very special place, different than even the prophet, who he gives visions and dreams. But Moses, he speaks to personally. Moses says he's his form. Alright? Moses is with God, and being up on Mount Sinai, you know, getting the law and being, when he went out to see God, what was it that happened with Moses when he was with God? You know, he would start, I mean, God's presence, he would be shining, and when he went back out to the people, right? So, Moses is, I don't know of anyone closer, you know, as far as the way God describes it here. So, God is angry with them. He departs from that place, and about that time, Aaron turns around, and Miriam is white from head to toe with leprosy. And Aaron pleads with God, please don't let her stay in this state. Moses pleads for her that she not be made this and be a cast out. Because what was the laws on all that we went through? She'd be outside the camp for good, you know, as long as this was there. And so God does relent, but says she's got to be out there 7 days. The camp stays 7 days. They stay there and until she is able to come back into the tent. So God relents from that. All right. I have taken way too slow, and we are ready for the spies going in. You want to just start up and pick up with the spies? That'll put us a little bit behind. But that'll pick us up, starting with the spies going out from Kadesh Barnea. And we'll pick up there Sunday. Thank y'all.